You're listening to a Why Now podcast.
This is the Worldwide Will Show on whynow.co.uk. I'm your host, Will. I'm a British Army veteran of just short of 11 years and served numerous tours of Afghanistan. In this show, I'll be speaking to former members of the British Armed Forces and Coalition Forces, giving them a platform of which to tell their life story, as well as experiences and how it's affected them. I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the Worldwide Will Show. I'm joined by...
Paul Naiman, aka Monkey.
Monkey, thank you for joining me, bro. Really appreciate it. Basically, this podcast is about telling people stories. Everyone's life is a story, and I think it's down to them to tell that story. So, Monkey, over to you, bro. Where did it start?
Well, I joined the Parachute Regiment in 2003. Went through some absolutely gopping training. Went up to one para.
Yeah,
down in Dover.
What year did you join?
Yeah, so it was 2003. Went down the one par in 2003. That was down in Dover. So it's like always the case. Just to obviously slightly digress. You know, you end up thinking that you're the top of the tree.
Yeah.
When you leave training, as you do.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, you think you're the top boy. You know, you pass P Company. You know, you're off to Bryce, you know, getting your wings, you know, you all of a sudden, you know, you're like, oh my God, I've passed this. And then, end up getting that, you know, you get down there and you realise you are an absolute worm.
Yeah.
When you get to battalion, you know, people have done so much.
Once you've passed an arduous selection, you think you're the top of the tree.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get to the destination, you realise you're just nothing.
You are absolutely nothing when you first turn up, so... Luckily, I managed to get myself on the boxing team.
Yeah.
On para.
Northeast lads. Northeast lads.
Exactly. You know, you end up boxing and getting amongst it. And what was it? I mean, at the time, I saw a thing off Grand Guard.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh when he said, oh, basically, he's managed to become in the army team and he won all these awards. But the only reason he went on the boxing team was he wanted to get 2 weeks off Otterburn exercise. I was howling. Howling at that. I think I had a little bit of that of myself, you know.
For the listeners, Otterburn is on the border of England and Scotland, and it's like a wasteland of marsh and just horrendous land. So what Monkey was saying there is his opponent didn't want to go on a 2 week training exercise and then volunteered for the boxing, but ultimately had to then face Monkey, who's somewhat of a boxing legend.
As I come out of that, went over to Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably say it wasn't a
what
proper...
What year was that?
That would have been 2005.
Right.
So, but 2005, you know, it wasn't the time of the peace era.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Things were going on, but it wasn't... What I got told about when I was
wasn't
Ireland,
as so kinetic as it was.
Yeah, it wasn't
the
as kinetic. You know, so you know, I'm not Walter Mitty. I will say how it is. It wasn't as kinetic as what you hear from the old boys, where they were, you know, in the troubles of the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What they went through, you know, was quite tough in the sense of like they couldn't more care who the enemy was, mm-hmm. who, etc. Mm-hmm. And then 2006, I remember. Like I was on a PTI, I was going on my PTI course,
mm-hmm. which is the physical training instructor.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, I do apologise. So that's an abbreviation.
No.
That's
so it. If you think of like the physical trainers at the gym, so PTI's course is to become the physical trainer within the unit that they serve in.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just gym queens who go to the sunbeds, have their hair gelled, and look good in a vest.
Yeah, that's it. Well, if you could put it correctly, that'll be the one. Like, usually, I was going for that. And then my boss rang us up and said we were deploying to Afghanistan as an FSG, because at the time, just before that, so if I slightly go back, I went back to the... We formed in the SFSG.
Mm-hmm.
Special Forces Support Group. And, you know, we... Lads didn't know what to make of it. Are we just going to be like a Sanger guard?
Was it a big change going from conventional parachute regiment infantry battalion to like a special forces support group? It was a massive change.
Yeah, of course it was. It completely changed the game. I think for a lot of lads, you know, we didn't know what to expect. You know, we had lads who were still like stuck in the one parage, mm-hmm, you know, and
the old
mentality.
Old
school mentality, you know, Falklands, everything, mm-hmm, else, you know, mm-hmm, maybe probably we had like as our
which is understandable because yeah, that's what they know.
Well, that's it. What was it when we were in the battalion? When we were going through training, and obviously when we were in battalion, you know, when we got sergeants, Badger, I won't say his name on this, but cracking bloke, and he would say, right, he was like, we've got young dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So we had people that were like joined 2001, 2002, who still took in the Power Edge weight, do you know what I mean? We still wanted to keep it like that as such. And then you had people who were willing to conform, you know, and like seeing for the role that it was.
You have to evolve.
Which is Ali, you know, it was you know, Ali, sorry, I do apologise. Ali is where, how can we put it? It's where something is amazing. Awesome, yeah. Well, something is awesome within the military.
Pinnacle.
The pinnacle, What was it? It's Ali. And then, deployed in 2006 to 2007 time with the SVSG. We went over to Afghanistan.
Yep.
But, it was a fantastic time. I can't reiterate that even more.
When you go from one world being airborne infantry to another world where you're thrown into a like, special forces community, it's a different world. And it's also like a different... It's different operational tour.
Massively,
different.
We can't like emphasize in that, you know, and the people that you're meeting on the way, you start realizing that, I mean, reflecting as you are as a soldier.
Yeah.
You know, massively. Like some of these people, like, you know, they're out there, do you know what I mean? And absolutely fantastic people, as in the way of being like a soldier, as a person. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, went from there to another tour in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Another tour. What was the year of the first tour,
It would have been 2006, 2008, and then the third tour, 2010. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 2010 tour was slightly different. It was probably, I think it was the bloodiest year in Afghanistan in 2010. I think we really, I think the British government had pushed it at this point to try and make an offensive and put a foothold. But at the end of the day, Afghanistan, with the Russians, you know, with the might of the Russians, the might of America, the might of ISAF, we could never get a foothold. And it's just one of them countries you will never, ever, ever defeat. No one's ever defeated it, and we never will.
Every nation that's gone into Afghanistan have underestimated the power of
the people, like people that are there.
Working in their backyard.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to Operic 4, which was 2005, with the parachute regiment, not one para, but another parachute battalion. I won't name them, but you know, higher command massively underestimated.
Oh, big time! Yeah,
in Kajaki. Yeah.
Well, I've read about this, and I've read various books, and talked to a couple of free para guys about it. The job they'd done was absolutely unreal. Like for the amount of men, like there's so many stories of like lads where they've been like 16 blokes in a PB or in a FOB or whatever, and they've managed to save off, 200 Taliban. Yeah.
It's unheard of.
Proper rogue drift, proper capability. And
the thing is like this.
Well, they're the same with the Marines.
They're swept under the carpet because they don't want... For me, the British government and the British hierarchy don't want to accept that we underestimated it.
Yeah, completely.
So you don't hear about it. Kit and equipment. You guys came under the sort of the Special Forces umbrella, so you got all the best kit. We came under a sort of similar umbrella where we had decent equipment, but like the bog standard infantryman, the equipment that he was given in Afghanistan was under par in my eyes.
Oh God, yeah.
Like the Osprey compared to Paraclete, I mean, there's a massive price difference, but you get what you pay for. On the first tour, my first tour, we got issued that stuff because it was a rush operation. We were thrown straight out there. They were like, here's your kit. Deal with it, and then we just bought our own plate carriers.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I remember, what was it? I mean, my first plate carrier out in Afghanistan was bought off the flea market in Afghanistan. I'm not going to lie. It was better than the stuff that we had, It was like a black body armour. We managed to, one of the guys that we used to work with, that was in before, managed to get us BDUs.
Yeah.
And it was a winter tour, so they were warmer. You know, it's a usual case, especially, I've got nothing against any of you, but usually in the Paris region, but you want to look a little like Ali as you possibly can. We had BDUs, we had the black saying, carriers.
There's a saying that Aliness saves lives.
And it's so true.
It's true. So,
it's true, yeah.
The better you look, the better you feel, the better you perform.
Yeah.
So that's how it is. And anyone but a Royal Marine will agree. I mean, we've got a few
Royal G10 for men.
We've got a few Royal Marines coming on the next podcast, next few podcasts, and you know, you'll hear us talking about how they love the issued equipment. As part of my podcast, I talk about my unit being 473 Special P Battery. We deal with long range patrols in terms of joint fires and precision strike. So, in a 6-man patrol, usually about 2 of them are JTAC trained. This is a like forward air controller. We'll just call it FAC for ease. So forward air controllers. So 2 of them are at least forward air controllers, and another one would have been a forward air controller, but like qualifications expired. So we have quite a lot. For a condensed unit of 30 to 40 men, we have a lot of joint tactical air controllers or forward air controllers. So for the SF community to go to the RAF for the JTACs, it was like a dagger in the heart. Like, why not pick us? But
you got to give it to them. They are good lads.
They are very good lads.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And we had our own agenda and our own avenue to go down, which we went down, and it's paid off. And you know, the guys are doing some cool stuff. Can't talk about it, but they're doing cool stuff right now.
Yeah,
to do with long range reconnaissance patrols. So, and we've taken that on as the only long range reconnaissance patrols for the British Army.
Now, to be honest with you, look, like, slightly digressing, like, you know, the pirates get taught. Obviously, you die. You know, people will die for this cap badge.
Yeah.
Will's unit are always taught, they'll die for that. The RAF Reds will get taught. It doesn't matter what cap badge you actually come from. Like, anyone that set foot in Afghanistan to fight and to be there, you were willing to die for that cap badge. And to me, you know, but
apart from the chefs who got the same medal, but I won't go there.
Hey, mate, there was a couple of hot lasagnas, all right?
Well done, chefs.
I could have slipped, you know what I mean? I ate well.
But going back to, so your first tour and your second tour, how had it changed you? So after your first tour, did you notice a difference in yourself? Or because I know for me, I didn't notice a difference, but everyone else around me did.
Yeah, I did not. You know what, Will? I'm probably on the same thing as that. I think I noticed a difference in, but not in a, it wasn't a bad way. I had more confidence about myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what was it? I had more confidence, you know. I've done a tour, so and a proper tour, you know. Yeah, wasn't in Northern Ireland 2005, just wasn't a proper tour. It was nice to get a gong.
I became egotistic, so I had a massive ego about myself because I'd done an operational tour.
Still do. You pulled yourself on that one.
I smashed a tour that was very kinetic in terms of engagements with the enemy, and we all came back, like all 30.
Well, that was
of
the same,
which is rare.
Same. Well, I think exactly the same. Well, you know what? You could have said that. So 2006 time, 2008 was pre IED.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that, I think, you know, I know lads did die around that time, but to be honest, what was it? It was before the IED stage, which is, you know. Which was, it was just like man against man.
Yeah.
Realistically. We were fighting against them. It was gun against gun.
Yeah.
You know, if you got caught up in that in a certain way, as in a firefight or whatever, I think it was
it was an accepted loss.
I think so, yeah. And luckily, I was the same as you. Well, we never come away. We come away unscathed.
Yeah.
You know, we are, you know.
Which is mad because there's some fucking mad situations.
Lads that we're working with, you know, some of them got caught up, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't too bad, in the sense of, you know, might have been caught in the foot or a couple of gun wounds and stuff like that, but
deaths.
It wasn't, and what was it, our first tour, it was the same again, what was it, very kinetic, very different, you know, a lot of lads even, you know, were happy to even leave the reg after that. Like, so, like, I'll be this, you know what I mean? I've done everything I wanted to do.
Done it.
Yeah, we're in the forces, right? I'm leaving, you know, I know, I had a couple of mates, I went and travelled the world.
Well, I think what people understand is, imagine training for a job that you never do.
Yeah.
So, like, as a soldier, you're trained to go to war.
Yeah.
And you're constantly training and training for years and years and years and years and years. And when you actually get to theatre, that's where you actually put all your training into practice. So, like, in a civilian sense, imagine training to be a nurse for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, but never actually getting to treat anyone.
Well, that's it. I think it's like training to be a firefighter but never putting a fire out.
Yeah.
Is your saying,
never seen a fire.
Never seen a fire. Yeah, that's it. You know, you want to be there for that 100%, reason.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those where be careful what you wish for.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
Because once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you do it, you can't undo it.
And you want it more.
But
I'll probably say it's a drug. Yeah, you know, you get that adrenaline that you probably never face. So, slightly digressing again. You know, when lads get out, they usually end up going in there. Like boxing, tie boxing, they want that adrenaline, they want that thrill, and it's thrill seeker as well, didn't
it? It's definitely a drug. So
it's a different adrenaline, though. You never felt that adrenaline in your 100%. Life. And, you're literally on the brink of, could you be here, could you not? You know, you could that, you know.
So when I came home from tour, whether it be R&R or afterwards, the way I describe it now, back then I couldn't describe it. The way I describe it now is, I had, go on, just top it up. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right.
Yeah.
We're just cracking a beer. No biggies.
No biggies. No biggins.
Yeah. I had a bank of adrenaline that needed to be used.
Yeah.
Like, it was full and it was rumbling and needed to be used.
Yeah.
And you'd go out for drinks with your friends and it'd be there and it's bubbling and you'd have almost withdrawal symptoms from not having that adrenaline.
Yeah.
But it's there in your body. So all you had to do was get into a fight. Or cause a bit of trouble, or do something.
Well, that's it.
Play rugby, or do something to release it. Do something
to release that. It is. It completely agreed there. Well, what was it? So what was it? Going on to the worst stage of my life, should I say? I've done them two. Is like I say, what was it? We all. How can I put it? Experience stuff when we out in Afghan and everything else, and for Iraq and wherever you've been. What was it? We all done the same. My concern was what was happening to me. At the end of it.
Yeah.
So, after having these two, I was thinking I was a man. You know, I was like, being the boy, as you think, as we all do when we're in the mill. You know, you've become this guy, haven't you? You know, this person that, you know, you how can I put it? You're unbeatable, aren't you, in a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can fight anyone, you can do anything, you're invincible, you know. And so you start realising, you know, lads that have been shot, I remember the first phase. So the first phase for me, mentally wise, was I started realising about lads that had been shot.
Mm-hmm.
I had a mate from another regiment that I went to school with for when his legs blown off, James Rose, who was just climbed Kilimanjaro unaided.
Shit.
Without no legs.
Fucking hell.
Like, done it on his hands. And what achievement. Yeah, what a legend. So
that's like a Guinness Book of Records.
Yeah, no, this is the first person ever done it, Kilimanjaro on his hands. Like, yeah, that's unreal, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like, with no legs, like, literally smashed it. So I remember originally when he's really down at his lowest, and I mean, you know, for me, what was it? It's hard because when you talk about mental health, I'm still in one tact. I'm still here. I haven't been shot. I haven't been blow up.
Yeah, there's no physical damage.
No physical damage, you know. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to stigmatise like mental health is I need to get a grip because I don't need to get a grip. You know, it is all right to be where I'm at.
Yeah.
But with James, what was he, you know, this guy, not only has he got the mental health issue of losing his legs.
What he went through,
you know, what was it, fighting in Afghanistan. You know, he's managed to bring himself around. At the end of the day, I can only salute that, you know what I mean, 100%. As a person.
Yeah.
Is, well, Jesus, I mean, what an achievement.
What, brilliant. Absolutely.
Amazing bloke. So I just want to give a big shout out to James.
100%.
For me, it was, I remember coming home and I was thinking, you know, the lads that had lost their legs, you know, lost a life, you know. Seth, who was with a guy that was with a unit that I was working with, and so far, you know, they lost their lives, you know. And I was remember talking to a lad called, so I'll only hear his nicknames on this, but like Gumbo.
That's fine.
You know, Gumbo was like, I remember speaking to him, I think it was like 2 weeks before he got shot in the head. I started thinking about this. So it was like around about the 2011 mark, so it would have been a year after my tour point, and I was signing off as well.
Mm-hmm. So signing off is the sort of the how do I put it, the notification you give to the military that you want to leave And it's a year's notice. So when you sign off, you have a year from that point as it will be your out point.
Yeah, completely agreed. It was started realising about this, and I was thinking, what is going on? And it's like anything on anything's life. I always find your life's going smooth, and then if anything's bad going to happen, it will happen within that year. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, so my grandfather died. I started thinking about these things, and I was leaving the military because at the time I wasn't making enough money.
Yeah.
And my friend rang us up from Sri Lanka saying, "Oh, jump on the ships." I'm making top dollar.
So, like, jumping on the ships is sort of slang for doing private, sort of anti-piracy security.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty much, I think, where we first met.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was so we met on the course, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we both did it. We're both leaving around the same time, and we both did an anti-piracy security course together.
Yeah.
Which, funnily enough, was in the Midlands, which is landlocked. Go figure.
Yeah, it's all true, yeah.
But we actually met on that course. It was like a 3-week course, I think it was.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
If we just take a step back and rewind a little bit.
Yep.
You joined the army in 2003, is that right? Same time as me?
That's right,
same year as me?
Yeah, yeah.
So sort of leading up to that, obviously, from when you were born to joining the army, just quickly, just sort of run me through that sort of dynamic, how it worked and where it was.
So I was born in Middlesbrough, 1985. And what was it? In all fairness, I had a good childhood.
Yep.
It was, you know, I had its ups and downs. Obviously, I think a lot of lads will probably relate it with being in the military. I had a bit of bullying when I was at school.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just something that everyone goes through. I don't think it's necessarily just the military. I think it's everyone.
No, of course, yeah.
Even bullies get bullied. That's why they bully.
Yeah, that's it. You know, but I did come from a good family, very happy family.
Yeah.
My old man was... He was, you know, a fantastic father, but you know, he's he did like his drink,
much like my old man.
Yeah, he did like his drink, and you know, but he did put food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
He did do everything else, and he provided and everything else. You know, throughout my childhood, you know, there was a couple of things that weren't right, like to say the least, and. But yeah, he was a good man. You know, he just had some of his own issues as well. You know, that are still playing on to this day, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, my old man does suffer quite bad from mental health.
Yeah.
To the point where he was homeless last month.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And stuff, and I've been trying to keep him through it, to be honest with you, you know. Trying to keep on top of myself as well.
It's a lot of stress.
A lot of stress, you know. You're trying to look after the old man, you know. At the end of the day, you know, I'm sure we can all connect. When you're very emotionally connected to someone, like I am with my old man, it's hard to keep on top, you know. You want to financially support him, you want to look after him in every way you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hard because... I think at my end, you know, I just want to be, you know, I want to be the son.
Yeah.
As such. Do you know what I mean? I want to be the kid.
The parent.
And not the parent, yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you end up taking this role. I'm sure a lot of military guys can figure this, you know, when your mum and dad are breaking down and stuff like that, all of a sudden you become the parent. You're the one that looks after these people, and you're like, you know, you feel like you have to take that role on because they're looked after you as a child.
Yeah.
But realistically, you know, when I look at other families and stuff, you know, it's not the case. You know, you shouldn't have to do that. You know what I mean? And it's horrible to go through.
It's a credit to you that you know you look after your own family, issues and the fact that you're taking on almost the father role, but with your own father.
I mean, of course.
It's a massive credit to you and the fact that you're taking that on.
Yeah, yeah.
Is kudos to you.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. And yeah, like I say, you know, from my childhood, you know, I was probably the same. So a lot of military guys do the same, you know, you get that bit of bullying, you know. So you end up going to martial arts, boxing, everything else that you do, you know, because you think, right, I've got to make myself tough. I need to harden myself, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, you used to get that thing in schools, you know, tell your teacher. Yeah, they tell your teacher. You tell your teacher. What was it? Yeah, you're grass. You know, going back on the mental health, this is, which I'll obviously go on to later. Like, what was it? You're too proud to say anything.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
until it gets on top. You know, and that's what was it, the reality of what is going on with the world. But yeah, and I remember thinking, right, I've got to harden myself up. And yeah, so I did. Like, kind of kept the walls at bay as such.
Yeah.
Like, it was more word of mouth, you know, because lads were like, oh, right, he's doing Aikido, he does jiu-jitsu.
He boxes,
you know what I mean? I don't want to get amongst him. But it was a good job. In a fair way to the guys there, so if you ever listen to this, the ones that have done it, like, it's a good job he did stay away from me. And I would suggest you keep away from me still.
I would. Because he knows more now.
Yeah, I know more. I know a hell of a lot more now. Yeah, I've kept on top of it.
And he's like fucking 18 stone now.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. You know, so, yeah, but, yeah, that was the reality of, you know, growing up in...
It's a very hard working class area
where I was from Middlesbrough, you know. It is an industrial town.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to learn to fight, and you know,
that's just the reality of where you lived.
You know, you've got to be hard. You're hard, or you become too soft and you go on the wayside.
You're either hard or you're a victim.
That's it. That is the reality of it. You know, don't get me wrong, Mums is some of the greatest people ever meet up there. And you know, the lovely, the kind, you know, they have that northern way about them where you can go up there and they will talk to you and they'll help anyone. And then you've got the other side that are just so rough, ready. They've been brought into a world where it's so tough.
Their whole life is quite broken,
and they've had to be this way to keep protected. Yeah. So they will bully, they will do whatever they need to survive.
Mm-hmm.
It is a survival instinct up there. And
it's a vicious circle that comes around.
It is a vicious, then you know what, you couldn't have said that any better. It is a vicious circle, Will.
Yeah.
That is perfect. Yeah, you couldn't have said that any better. Like, that was the reality. So,
you joined the army at 17?
Yes, 17.
Because I joined them at 16 at the same year, but you were born the year before. You joined the parachute regiment, which then evolved to Special Forces Support Group. You did the Ireland tour, and then the Afghan tours.
Yeah.
Did you notice any difference in yourself as a person?
There was a couple of moments, I think, you know, when my grandfather died, you know, we all have to face this.
Yeah,
it's just life, and, you know, some people get by, some people don't.
Yeah.
But I was very close to him, very, very close to my granddad.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that was the first start of it, so... I remember watching a film called Jack Frost. Jack Frost is about a guy. About a guy who turns into a snowman. In the winter, but it's the father of the family.
Yeah.
You know, and he's died. Like, you know, and he melts at the end. And I won't lie. I've got to say how it is. I literally cried my eyes out. You know what I mean? And this is a kid's film as well. That was the day I knew there was something wrong. Because I was like, I've never done this before.
Why am I crying? It's different.
Yeah. And then. I remember, went on the ships and, you know, left the military.
That's like anti-piracy security.
The anti-piracy security. Yeah. And, you know, life was all of a sudden turning good again. You know, I was going around the world. It was sunlight all the time. You know, getting off in different ports. I was drinking, meeting lads of the same. You know, I was like, this is, what the hell was I doing in the past? You know, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really enjoying this. When I left the piracy, because obviously it got to the point where it was, the money was going so low to the point where, you know, what was it, 3,000, I mean, some lads, that's what they're earning, but if you're going away from your family, you know, they're earning £3,000, £4,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting ridiculous. You know, you're spending time away from your family, you're putting your life at risk, and I wasn't willing to do that. So I end up, I went over to Iraq as a bodyguard for Iraqi. And there was a couple of moments. So I spoke to an ex-sergeant major in the Royal Irish, who was probably one of their most decorated guys ever in their regiment. And, you know, we were chatting.
And the Royal Irish, they were part of 6th Air Assault as well.
That's right, yeah. But this guy,
They're not Reg, though, are they?
No. Only
joking.
We
love you, Irish Rangers.
Yeah, we do. You know, and he was, you know what, he was my CP, like, as in, I'd done my CP course, but he was the guy, the man. Like, he literally had everything. Like, he was like a mega base computer, and he was quite like he saw my like CP skills out as such.
Yeah.
You know, he had me up in the morning checking vehicles, doing this, doing that, checking vehicles. You know, he literally everything. Like, it was like a tick list with him that was already on his brain.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's very amazing. Just unreal. Like, yeah, but obviously I was like, that, like,
that's how you need to be.
That's how you need to be. Yeah, he had everything down to the, like, to the T. Yeah. So I met him and, yeah, we had a little moment, you know, we both having, I think we just having like a couple of cokes and had some of the weight kebab. We watched the film and we got chatting because we got quite close to him, which is quite unheard of with this guy. And I was like, man, do you watch like literally like kids' films sometimes? And like, you're literally a bitch. And he did, he turned around like, and it was like under a bit of a mutter, should I say. And he just kind of turned around and went, yeah, I do. Yeah. You know. And I realized that moment I weren't alone. And it was kind of like that.
The thing
and
is, then, it's that weird stigma where it's not manly. It's not manly to cry, whereas like it probably takes about 4 years.
Yeah, that's it.
To lose. So we spoke.
Well, yeah, that's it. If you can give the analogy of how we put it.
The analogy of the terms of the film Venom with Tom Hardy, where the alien goes inside him. So for us, that was the military, where you get re-indoctrinated, you get institutionalized. Whereas the venom's inside you, and it takes almost 4 years. I know it's for me,
same
for Monkey,
exactly,
and
same,
a few of the guys I've spoken to.
Yeah,
for that venom to leave you, for that monster to leave you, and become a normal person of society, or civvy, as we call the rest of you lot.
Yeah, but I think it's like you said there, like you could have put it in the perfect way, you become a civvy, but all of a sudden you start feeling these emotions
that you've never really felt before.
No, you didn't feel when you were
or
in the military.
If
no,
you
didn't
did
feel
them, but you expressed them
in a different way.
In an arsehole way.
Yeah.
So instead of crying, you'd laugh.
Yeah.
So like, weirdly, at funerals, you'd look at each other and smile. And everyone else would be like, what the fuck are those weirdos smiling at?
Yeah.
Whereas really, the emotion is sadness, but the only way you can deal with it in the mental state that you are is to fucking smile and snigger and be like a child.
Yeah.
But that's because that's who you are, really, is a child. And then when you leave, it takes a good 4 years to readjust. Now,
and
some
unfortunately,
people, some
when
people,
these emotions come back,
it's fucking hard.
What happens is you,
mate,
I cry
at the Lloyd's TSB advert with the fucking foal and the mother horse running across a frozen lake. I'm sat there, my fucking chin's going, my eyes are going. My wife's looking at me and say, "What's fucking wrong with you?"
What's happened to my husband? And you feel like, let's be honest, you feel like such a pussy.
But it's normal and it's normal, fine.
Yeah,
that's the weird thing about it. Like, fuck, who gives a fuck if you cry at TSB adverts? To make you less of a man, doesn't mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't mean you weren't fucking kicking doors in an Afghan and putting rounds down.
Completely agree. Like, you literally, you know, you become. It's one of them things when I was in the military, like, I remember, like, looking at lads that had got out and they put themselves in such a shit state. And I was thinking, what the fuck is up with you guys? Do you know what I mean? I was like, what's up with you? Like, what was it? You know, you're actually fucking paratroon. You know,
it's supposed to be this and this. This is what a man's supposed
to be. And it was always the same time frame, 3 to 4 years. You know, I was seeing a bloke and he was like, I'm in shit state. I've lost everything. I've had £1 million worth of debt. You know, what was
I left my wife.
What was it? I'm drunk all the time. And I was thinking, what the fuck is 4 years later? I was like, bingo. I'm in the exact same situation.
I am in that bracket.
But you know, I was thinking, why have I done this?
For me, it's taken me a very long time to find out who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am now comfortable as to who I am. And, like, you know me, I don't give a fuck what people think
before that.
So, but I still have that. Like, fuck you, I don't give a fuck.
So, you know, I don't want to pull it to everyone that's getting on the military to scaremonger them.
Yeah.
If you've done the scaremongering to us and the proper, you know, if you've been amongst it so far, it does, honestly, you get... a very good friend of mine, the owner of Op Spartan, by the way, on Facebook.
Brilliant group.
And, you know, he, even though he's a Geordie, I do like him. He's, you know, Steve, he's, you know, I remember him chatting and This is at the start of it all.
So just explain what Osportin is. It's a group made for veterans who are currently struggling or not struggling, ones who've struggled
or have
struggled and made it through in order to help others and That's try it. And drag each other through.
That's it. It's veterans that have got out of the military. It doesn't matter if you've got PTSD. Unfortunately, anyone that's served who's been amongst the as grind. You put it, the grind, we've all got our own PTSD. Everyone's got a bit of it. Yeah, like, it doesn't matter. You can pretend like you haven't, but we all have. Like,
a lot of people judge because... Like,
it's a sexy word at the moment, isn't it? PTSD, mental health, and everything else.
In a team
else.
Of six, we've been through the same thing, but we all react differently to it.
Yeah.
And like things that have troubled me in my life won't trouble someone in the same situation as it does in their life, but it might do in 5 years' time, 4 years' time, 10 years' time.
Yeah, I've been to the point where, you know, I was actually screaming at myself in the street one day.
Mm.
And this is like people walk past going, what's the matter with me? Screaming at myself, you know what I mean? Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I couldn't get it. I literally got that frustrated with myself. I was like, fucking hell.
So,
like, why is this happening? You know, I couldn't understand it. Mm. Couldn't understand it. Why is my brain doing this? Why am I doing this? Why don't I want to be with my family? Why don't I want to be with anyone that I love? Why do I want to push myself away? And
so for me, I use drink as like a numbing agent.
Yeah.
To just numb myself.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, completely agree. What was it? I used drinking to,
narcotics.
Yeah, different narcotics and stuff like that to just numb the feeling of what I was, what I was doing and why I was feeling like this. Why am I such a pussy? It doesn't have to be PTSD. Like, what was it? You know, people put a word...
Enable it.
But PTSD, you know, what was it? When people think PTSD, you're like a World War One soldier. You know, what was it that, you know, you sat there in a trench shivering, like, you know, that's not PTSD. PTSD is a wide variety of stuff.
100%.
You know, you're not laying under a table.
Yeah.
You know, staring at a screen, like...
It could be completely normal, but it's ruining you inside.
It's ruining you inside, yeah. I know the medical definition of... flashbacks and stuff like that. Like, look, it doesn't have to be flashbacks. I mean... you could have done like some of the things that you've done and stuff like that, and I know a lot more tougher, braver people in my world, you know, that and in your world will that have been through so much more and done so much more. It doesn't mean anything to anyone.
It means nothing.
What was it? You know, what you've seen is what you've seen. You know, I personally, you know, and embarrassing as it is, like through the night I still shake.
Yeah, yeah.
I still have thingies, you know what I mean? Like the girlfriend that I'm with now.
But it shouldn't be embarrassing, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like, of course, yeah,
we need to shake this sort of stigma that comes with mental health that you should be ashamed or embarrassed about it.
That's it, completely agreed with it. Completely agree, Will. Completely agreed.
Like, it is what it is. And you fucking, like, it sounds weird, but I think it's the film Platoon with the black guy. It says, ain't nothing, not a thing.
Ain't nothing but a thing. Yeah, yeah,
do
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's nothing. Yeah. Just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
No, and it is.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
No, that's it. I mean, I still shake at night. I mean, I don't know whether that's from someone from childhood. I don't know whether...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it takes its toll. And
I think it takes its toll. What was it? Even she said it was after Afghanistan that I started shaking. I started thinking, you know, what was it? I think, because you're on high alertness at all times. And then when you start coming out of that, you start realising that you're on the civvy street and everything else, that's when all this stuff starts kicking in. It's the emotion starts kicking in from there.
Yeah.
Like, you're so used to being high alert. You're 100%. So used to being ready.
Yeah.
For me, what was it? I end up... I was happily married, two kids. And I don't know what it was. I remember... What was it? I think it was when me and you were on a certain close protection job.
Yeah.
Well, together, you know, we've done very well together. You know, we're both team leaders on that.
Yeah.
I think it was around about that time. I remember I was looking out the window and I was in my life. What was it? So I've had this is around about the 3-4 year point where
year point we were talking about.
We were talking about, when it hits, you know, and I wanted this excitement again. I wanted to be full of adrenaline, you know, I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. The man that I thought was that I was in the region. Whether I was him, I don't know. But
in your eyes,
I believed I was him.
In your eyes, that's it. Yeah.
I believe that was that guy. But yeah, I wanted to be him again, you know. And no, I lost everything for it, you know. And a lot of lads do the same type of thing. So yeah, I end up with another girl.
Well, I think
it was different.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think you changed the person. I know I did.
Yeah, changed the person within that time. Like, well, I was excited outside having these feelings again. Then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was it, yeah. What I like to say, becoming normal again.
Yeah, you're becoming this person. Yeah, again, yeah. You know, and I just, how can I put it? You know, I'm very sorry to the people that I hurt within this period. You know. What was it? Because I hurt a lot. And yeah, it was literally got to the point, you know, like cutting the bone, finding it. But yeah. I hurt a lot of people in the process because I just couldn't understand what was going on with me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't understand what was going on in my head. I couldn't understand, like, why, like, I met this, you know, this other girl when I was out in the pub and so far out, and I just wanted this, like, I don't know, this, like, type of adrenaline rush. I wanted to be loved again. I wanted to be, my whole mental health had, like, completely changed at this point. So at this point, this is a couple of nights before, I was like shouting at myself, like saying, what is the matter with me?
Yeah.
I can't decide, you know, and I was screaming at myself in frustration, like going, why is this happening? Why is this, you know, and I couldn't get over it. And
you probably needed some sort of satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah.
That you no longer got from serving.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. I think it was, I'd come out of the services and all of a sudden I felt like I was nothing, you know, I wasn't part of a machine. I'm sure you can relate in that. When you're in the British military, you're a part of a machine. You're a cog in the machine.
That was well oiled.
You're moving forward. Well. Yeah, this machine worked forward. It's like the Terminator coming at people, you know. And you were part of this thing, and all of a sudden you're not. Yeah, my mental health had went by that point. And,
yeah,
you know, that's what I started using narcotics, drink. Everything
to try and sort of suppress it
because you have no purpose in life anymore.
You self medicate,
but you got no purpose. You got no purpose when you left. You know, this is 3 or 4 years afterwards. You know, and if you're anything like me, I was a bit like a bit weird. And so I was watching Para Reg programs and you know, watching going on Instagram watching the paras. Watching, you know, what the guys, they were doing. Yeah. I was just like, oh, I wish I was there. You know, I wish I was in the unit again.
But it's a constant journey of finding who you are, you know.
Yeah.
And once you realise that was you, it's not you anymore. But are who you are now.
Yeah.
And it's about going forward. See, I went through that. I was like fucking constantly watching what the guys were doing, and such a cool fucking they did an exchange program in America, and I was like, why the fuck wasn't that? Why didn't that happen when I was in there?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I can't believe that. But, like, and watching, you know, speaking to the guys and the operations they went on, and I was just like, do you know what? I've had my time. That was me. This is me now.
Yeah.
And I can only go forward.
You know, Will, what was it? You couldn't have put that any better. What was it? And anyone that's listening to this, what was it? Especially X-Mil,
mm-hmm.
that is the way to see it, is that's who you were. You had your time.
Mm-hmm.
You left for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is to anyone. It's like a bereavement or like a relationship.
It's 100% a bereavement.
Yeah, it's a bereavement.
It's a bereavement. And
it's something that's died inside of you.
When you leave the army or planning to leave the army or signed off, they need to portray it like that. They need to say, leaving the army is like a bereavement.
Yeah, completely agree.
Because it fucking is.
It fucking is. You know, you think you're jumping outside of it and you're like, this is the fucking best thing of my life, you know. I'm so glad I'm leaving. And it's like I said, that it was to any guy that's listening out there, I kid you not, the 3 to 4 year mark, right, is such a big thing.
Yeah.
I have read so many people's lives, 3 to 4 years. 3 to 4 years, 3 to 4 years. That's how it goes. What was it? I don't 100%. Know why it is that. What was it when you first get out? You've got this purpose, you know, you've got this thinking of, I'm going to make millions of pounds. I'm so glad I'm out the army. There was nothing in there for me anymore. It's 3 to 4 years' time, and then all of a sudden, what was it? It hits you. It's not about the money that you're going to make.
Yep, 100%.
It's not about the figure that you're going to make. It's not about the friends that you're going to make. All of a sudden, you start realising the best times in your life was then.
Yeah.
But you were a different person then.
100%.
So I think with the bereavement, with the type of relationship type thing where you've had a very strong relationship with someone, that's when it figures you. Do you know what I mean? That's when it comes back at you.
Anyone that's here now that's listening to this, what was it, from an ex-military point of view or ex-vet, yes, I am struggling. Yes, understand, but you look, listen, you're not alone. You're not alone. What was it? I've literally went to the point where I tried to kill myself. And I tried, but luckily got luckily I had a civilian that found me. You're gonna face these things in life. What was it when you're leaving the mill? It's the worst thing that you're gonna go through. And when I lost everything, and I realised that my life had just become about drink and drugs and fighting and what was it just being this person in a certain way that I wasn't. Like, what was it? And then when you realise, out of all of that, at the end, you end up realising that you've lost everything. And I was very lucky as well. I met a girl, I'll put it on there. Met a girl called Lana, who I've known her for quite a few years. She kind of pulled us out of it as well. Like, what was it? She came along at the right time. Like, it was a good job I met her. Like, what was it at the time? Because she gave me, like, a couple of days. She looked after me, everything else, you know what I mean? And made sure with that.
Absolute legend.
Thank you, mate.
Always got time for you. Right.
Well, and that's Paul Neyman, a.k.a. Monkey, and signing off. Thank you very much.